This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. The United Nations General Assembly is about to hold a special session on the world drug problem. This once every 10 years meeting is particularly significant given that there is now a growing consensus among the world's nations that the global war on drugs is an abject failure. The drug war, championed by the United States, is premised on strict prohibition of drugs and criminalization of drug use and sales. Money has poured into enforcement, but the bloodshed, violence, corruption, and incarceration linked to the drug war has only increased. My guest is Johan Hari. He's an award-winning journalist and author of Chasing the Scream, The First and Last Days of the War on Drugs, which is just now out in paperback. Welcome to the show, Johan.
It's great to be back with you, Sonali. Thanks.
So let's talk about the UN's role in general, because I don't think this is discussed very much. I understand that in 1998, the UN General Assembly set out a very ambitious goal, which was that in 10 years, the world would be drug-free. And of course, we know that in 2008, that didn't happen. And now we're at a stage where we're really questioning this approach. But how much responsibility does the United Nations itself bear for promoting the current war on drugs as it's designed?
Well, I'm sure all your viewers will have noticed that drugs have in fact disappeared and no one can get hold of any drugs. So it's been an entire success. It's an important question about the UN. I think, like a lot of things that happen with the UN, it's basically hijacked by the most dominant countries. So, and this is why I think what's going to happen next week is so exciting. What you've basically had is every 10 years, all these countries gather and they're forced to rally behind these ridiculous Stalinist slogans like a drug-free world, we can do it. And this is the first time that loads of countries are going to turn up, shuck off the kind of US threats or the Russian threats and say, this is crazy, this doesn't work. There are alternatives that have been tried in the world and we've got to pursue them. And so the last month or so, I've been speaking to some of the people who are going to be speaking out at the UNGAS. And I think their stories really help us to understand why people are rebelling. And it'll actually sound very familiar to US viewers, because the reasons why the war on drugs is being rejected all over the world are the reasons why it's been rejected in the United States itself.
So how have people been speaking out in the lead up to the UNGAS, as it's being called, UN General Assembly Special Session on Drugs? And I should mention that last week on our show, we touched base with Laura Carlson, a journalist who was on this Latin America caravan for peace, life, and justice that is touring through Central America, which is, you know, one of the epicenters of the war on drugs, going through Mexico, and they're also heading to the United Nations for this meeting. But how have people who you've spoken to, you know, been sharing their stories? What are some of the stories that illustrate the failure of this war?
It's fascinating because it'll be playing out in the UN chamber itself. So, for example, Jindřich Vobaril is the drugs minister for the Czech Republic. And I think his story tells us a lot. He basically grew up as a kind of street kid. His dad was a quite violent alcoholic. And from when he was about 11 or 12, Jindřich, that is, he started kind of basically, as he puts it, using any substance he could get his hands on, just trying to intoxicate himself to deal with the pain and the distress he felt. He had a lot of other kids who were basically, a lot of friends who were also basically street kids who did the same. He had friends who started to die. He could feel himself slipping down the road towards addiction. The thing that got him out of it was becoming part of the democratic underground, the punk resistance to the dictatorship, the Czech and the Soviet dictatorship. And so he kind of got out of it that way. But although a lot of his friends didn't and died, and when communism fell, when the Soviet tyranny fell, he basically set up the first drug treatment center in the Czech Republic. And he wanted to introduce the policies that he suspected would save people's lives. Policies like the ones that have been pursued in Switzerland in the last decade, where heroin has been legalized for addicts, and there have been no overdose deaths on legal heroin, as I reported on from my book. But what he found is you're not allowed to do that under the UN conventions. It's forbidden. You're not allowed to legalize any drug. You're not allowed to legalize supply of it. So he basically found that these things that he knew would save people's lives were blocked, and as a result, people were dying. So one of the things he'll be speaking out about is how the war on drugs is killing enormous numbers of addicts all over the world who should be still alive, able to rebuild their lives. I mean, that's the cause that's closest to my heart. As you know, you know, one of my earliest memories was of trying to wake up one of my relatives and not being able to. We had drug addiction in my family. But some of the other reasons why people are speaking out, I think, are just as important. So Mark Golding is the Justice Minister for Jamaica, and an amazing man. A couple of years ago, he had to make a call that no politician wants to make. He had to ring a mother and tell her that her young son had been busted on the street for smoking a spliff and had been subsequently beaten to death in custody. And Mark really sees a parallel with the Black Lives Matter campaign. You know, Mark Golding, that is, the Justice Minister, drug laws simply cannot be enforced against everyone who breaks them. Half the population of the United States has broken the drug laws. Obviously, you're not going to put half the population of the United States in prison. So what happens? Everywhere, the drug laws end up being enforced against the groups the police already hate or the society already wants to persecute. In the United States, as people know very well, that's grotesquely disproportionately African-Americans. African-Americans are no more likely to use or sell drugs than anyone else. They make up the vast majority of people who go to prison for it. I think we talked about last time I was on the show, the story of that I tell in Chasing the Scream, of how Billie Holiday, the great jazz singer, was stalked and basically killed by the founder of the war on drugs, a story that's playing out every day in the United States. Now, in Jamaica, almost everyone is what would be called black. But what it's used to persecute poor young men in the slums. And Mark Golding basically said, we can't carry on like this. We've got to stop giving the police a pretext to harass poor young men. And so they decriminalized cannabis. Now, he wanted to fully legalize, but again, against the UN conventions, they can't do it. Rich countries like Switzerland and the United States can break the conventions if they want, just like rich people in the US can use drugs and get away with it if they want, but poor countries can't. So he'll be speaking out about that, about how the war on drugs is really used as a pretext to harass and punish and penalize poor people all over the world or despised minority groups. The other person who's speaking out is what I think is the single biggest issue. Obviously, the other things I think are hugely important, but I think the single biggest moral issue. I spoke in Cartagena in Colombia about a month ago to Mauricio Rodriguez, former Colombian ambassador to Britain. But he's advising President Santos, who's going to hopefully be speaking at the UN, and whoever's representing Colombia will be making this point that the main moral issue is the violence caused by prohibition, by the act of prohibition. If you want to understand that, best way to explain it is, your viewers can try this as an experiment. Go into a liquor store and try to steal a bottle of vodka. If they catch you, they'll call the cops and the cops will come and take you away. So that liquor store doesn't need to be violent. It doesn't need to be intimidating. They've got the law there to uphold their property rights. Now try to steal a bag of weed or a bag of cocaine. If the guy who sells that catches you, he can't call the cops, right? Cops would come and arrest him. He has to fight you. Now, as I learned from my friend Chino Harding, the transgender crack dealer in Brooklyn that I write about in Chasing the Scream, you know, if you're a drug dealer, you don't be having a fight every day. You've got to establish a reputation for being such a fearsome person that no one would dare to take you on. I was about to use a phrase that's not a fearsome person, that realization was on air. And you have to establish your place in that neighborhood through violence and intimidation against other dealers. The war on drugs creates a war for drugs. A man I would never normally approvingly quote, Milton Friedman, the Nobel Prize winning economist, who was an evil man, nonetheless did one good thing in his life, which is he calculated how many people are killed every year by that dynamic. In the US alone, it's 10,000. 10,000 additional murders. You want to understand the violence playing out where you are in LA, in Chicago, all over the United States. That's going on now. That's bad enough if you live in a housing project in Brownsville, Brooklyn. If you're on the supply route, well, obviously, even, you know, the grimmest housing project in Brownsville is only going to be like 20% of the economy is going to be in the hands of that illegal trade. Talk about Ciudad Juarez, where I reported from. It's a border city, Mexican border city with the United States. It's 70% of the economy. So you just guarantee that these deranged armed groups will just take over the society. I spent time getting to know the hitman for the deadliest Mexican drug cartel. I'll explain his story in the book. But so one of the things Mauricio Rodriguez will be explaining is this violence, which is entirely the result of prohibition, is destroying his country. It has destroyed Mexico. More people, by some calculations, have died in drug war-related violence in Mexico and Colombia than have died in the Syrian civil war. And we can end this violence. And if you want to know how, ask yourself, where are the violent alcohol dealers today? Does the head of Smirnoff go and shoot the head of Heineken in the face? Do the kids who work in the liquor aisle at Walmart go and shoot the people who work in the bar across the street? Of course not. Exactly that happened under alcohol prohibition, and it ended the day alcohol prohibition ended. You know, this is violence we can end if we choose to.
So, Johan, how are the UN delegates going to, you think, change the current situation as it is? Because, as you said, the rich countries can break the UN treaties that have been passed. They can break the conventions. They can break the agreements, but the poor countries can't. So, and we know state by state in the United States, there have been some steps towards just marijuana legalization. But is the U.S. as a whole going to champion the ending of a war that it has promoted and that it has poured billions of dollars into and staked its reputation on? And without U.S. support, will the General Assembly of the UN be able to do anything to change this horrific situation?
Yeah, those are really important questions. So the US has always been the country that was at the forefront of imposing this drug war on the rest of the world through threats, through intimidation, through violence in some cases. There's a great phrase, Harry Anslinger, the man who kind of invented the modern war on drugs, when the last time there was any dissent at the UN about this in the 1950s, when someone argued against him, he said, these were his exact words, "I've made up my mind, don't try to confuse me with the facts," which I think is like the perfect motto for the entire drug war. Now, the US is entering the UNGAS next week in this really contradictory situation. They still have a huge bureaucracy committed to the international drug war. The United States is still at the forefront of imposing it on the rest of the world, and of course, terrorizing and causing disasters within the United States in the name of the drug war. And yet, as you say, because of a democratic rebellion by ordinary US citizens, the United States itself is in breach of the conventions. Three US states have now fully legalized cannabis. Support has gone up since people have seen cannabis. They don't have a majority in the US who A, agree with the statement the war on drugs has failed, and B, are in favor of legalizing cannabis, fully legalizing it straight away. But yeah, the US is still going to be at the forefront of banging its fist on the table and demanding that people fall in line. It won't be as bad as some of the other countries. If you look at a weird mixture of countries, you've got Russia, Iran, South Africa, Thailand, Cuba, for some reason no one can explain to me. So you've got this kind of coalition of China. You've got a kind of coalition of states that are demanding either to maintain the drug war or even to step it up. So the dissident countries are asking for two quite moderate things. First thing they're saying is, we're not saying the whole world should move towards the policies that have been proven to work, Portugal, Switzerland, Colorado. They're not demanding that. All they're saying is countries should be free to choose their own path if they want to, without being threatened and intimidated by other countries. So they're just asking for the same freedom that the people of Colorado rightly seized, the people of Switzerland rightly seized.
So that's a way to try to get some change. Instead of saying at the UN level, let's decriminalize drug use and end prohibition, it's sort of this let states exercise their own sovereignty when it comes to drug policy.
Exactly. Mm. And it's very like the case that was made, you know, about Colorado, Washington, and Oregon. You know, well, you know, we'll have the laboratory of democracy, let countries, let places experiment, you know. So that's partly it. The other thing they've demanded, and I think it's so revealing that this is being resisted, what the dissident countries are asking for is that the UN just sets up a panel of the internationally recognized experts on questions like addiction, underage drug use, prohibition-related violence, to just prepare a report that can report back in 2 years to the UN to just say, this is the best evidence on what works and what doesn't in drug policy. And I think it's incredibly revealing that the US, Russia, China, all these other places are resisting that demand. If you don't want to look at the facts, that tells you something really. Some know that what is not best backed up by the facts, that at some level they know that this is causing a disaster. Jindřich Fobaril, the amazing Czech drug minister, the former street kid turned government minister and advocate for the rights of addicts, was saying this to me. You know, we're talking about the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. You know, if I think about people I met when I was working on Chasing the Scream, or the families of people I met, insane violence, making addicts' lives worse, destroying addicts, imprisoning 2 million people in the United States. You know, the stakes are incredibly high here. And these countries are saying we shouldn't even do a fact check. We shouldn't even look at the evidence. That I think that's quite scandalous.
So then, what are you going to be attending this meeting next week at the UN, and what role can civil society journalists like yourself play here? I mean, this is happening on US soil, which is at least good for Americans. I'm wondering if you and others will be able to have your say. Will civil society representatives be able to speak up?
This is the most pretentious and irritating thing I've ever said in my life, but I have to go to Paris to talk about the French translation of my book, so I can't be there annoyingly, but I apologize. But there are going to be amazing, well, Laura, who you spoke to, is with the delegation of Mexican victims. Yeah, who's with delegation, I think, from Global Exchange, a fantastic organization that's taking victims of the Mexican drug violence, and I think Central American victims as well. I was just in El Salvador recently, and the situation there is horrifying as well. So yeah, there's going to be Transform, a fantastic British group, is taking victims of the drug war from all over the world to give their testimony, to force people to confront the stakes. What I would say to anyone watching your program is, this is something where activism can really make a difference. This is a hollow war. It's hard to find anyone or even defend it who's not paid professionally to do it. It is falling apart, but it will only fall apart if we band together and demand it. I told the story in my book Chasing the Scream of how a group of homeless street addicts in Vancouver banded together and demanded a change to the drug laws there. It led to the opening of the first legal injecting room in Canada, a Supreme Court ruling that ruled that addicts have a right to life. It has saved thousands of people's lives. Those changes are happening all around us. Every day that someone new joins that fight, it will happen faster. And every day it happens faster is more people's lives will save, more addicts who will get to turn their lives around, more people in the supply route countries who won't be horrifically butchered by these crazed, violent criminal gangs that we've empowered with this war. It's hard to think of many policies where a relatively small change will save huge numbers of people's lives. This is one of them. So on the book's website, it's chasingthescream.com. I give a list of the organizations in the US that people can join. There's so much activism about this. The activists are such amazing, inspiring people. I've been involved in lots of kind of lefty political movements, and it's the one that is most inspiring, brave, full of people who've got so much heart invested in this fight. So I would really urge people to get involved. You can really save people's lives doing this.
And we'll post a link to your website, chasingthescream.com, from our site later today. Johan, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with the French translation.
Ah, bien sûr. That's about the bit of my French. So, yeah.
Thank
Great.
you so
Thank you so
much.
much.
Johan Hari
Great.
Is an award-winning journalist. He's the author of Chasing the Scream, The First and Last Days of the War on Drugs. And we had interviewed him about that book. His book is just now out in paperback. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.